I fear not the dark itself, but what may lurk within it. Welcome to Lurk, bringing you creepy, strange, and bone-chilling stories, with your host, Jamie Jackson.
Lurkers, welcome to this week's episode. Before we get started, just a quick reminder that we now have a Patreon, where for $5 a month you can get extra episodes, plus some other cool stuff. Also, we have that Sasquatch Festival coming up June 24th at Piney Run Park in Sykesville, Maryland. If you happen to be in the area, make sure you stop by. And now, on to the episode. This week we're going to be talking about Foo Fighters. And I don't mean Dave Grohl's band. And if you're older-ish or not a fan of rock, there's a rock band called Foo Fighters, just so you understand what I'm not talking about. I went back and forth about how exactly to structure the episode, but I think the best way is to start at the beginning. So you won't get the info about the name Foo Fighter just yet. Our topic today takes place during World War II. And I think it's important to highlight what exactly was transpiring in that time, because there was a lot. First, there's the whole Nazi Germany issue. There's a lot with Germany in that era, but to simplify, it became a dictatorship where the government controlled everyone and everything. The Third Reich, which is another term for Nazi Germany, committed genocide to include the killing of 6 million Jews, around 6 million Soviet civilians, 1.8 million Polish civilians who were not Jewish, 312,000 Serbian civilians, 250,000 to 500,000 Roma or Gypsies, up to 250,000 people with disabilities living in institutions, and 70,000 plus other groups like repeat criminal offenders, Jehovah's Witnesses, gay men, and political opponents. I got those numbers from the United States Holocaust Memorial Museum, so they are about as accurate as you can get. The point is, that's a lot of senseless death. Then you have a world war going on. And then there were a lot of technological advances that included widespread manufacture of penicillin, jet engines, electronic computers, and radar. And of course, there were some secret weapons that the Germans were experimenting with. Some we know about, and some we don't completely know about. And I don't want to go into too much on this topic, because it could be a whole other level of discussion. Like, maybe an episode. And then, of course, last but not least, is the development of the atomic bomb, and the eventual deployment. It was a really busy time in quite a few ways. Would it be a stretch to think that with all this craziness happening on Earth, that life forms from another planet might be interested in what the heck we were doing? That's really a rhetorical question, because I'm about to share with you that it seems aliens were in fact interested to see what we were doing. Before we get started, I want to remind you that what I'm going to tell you about is before UFOs and flying saucers were talked about. The famous sighting by Kenneth Arnold in Washington on June 24, 1947, near Mount Rainier, was what brought about the term flying saucer. We talked a little about his sighting in Episode 3, The UFO Ranch. The Roswell crash happens the following month in July of 1947. Just to put those two major UFO cases in the timeline, they happen after World War II, which means after everything I'm going to tell you about happens. In the 1930s, mystery aircraft were reported, but because things in Europe were heating up, anything unusual in the sky was considered an enemy aircraft of some sort. There were mystery lights over Great Britain, but they were dismissed as being caused by the German Zeppelins, spying in preparation for an invasion. There were actually things sighted that caused scares in South Africa, Canada, the United States, and Britain. In September 1941, in the Indian Ocean, two sailors on the deck of the SS Pulaski, a Polish merchant vessel transporting British troops, reported seeing a strange globe glowing with greenish light about half the size of the moon as it appears to us. They alerted a British officer on board, who watched the movements of the object with them for over an hour. Then, on February 25, 1942, unidentified aircraft swept over the coast in Los Angeles County in California. There were two waves of unidentified craft, and they were met with blasts of gunfire. The assault on the aircraft lasted nearly 2 hours. The unidentified aircraft were spotted at 2:22 a.m., and blackouts were ordered. Blackouts were exactly what they sound like. All lights were extinguished. People put covers over windows and doors to prevent light from showing outside. This was all done to prevent any enemy aircraft from being able to see anything on the land below. There were as many as 15 unidentified planes that were considered to possibly be operated by enemy agents, specifically the Japanese. The objects were reported to be flying at very slow speeds, then accelerating up to 300 miles per hour, and at heights of 9,000 to 18,000 feet. The unidentified craft dropped no bombs, and none of the planes, or whatever they were shot down. None of the U.S. Army or Navy planes were in action at the time. There was an estimated 1,450 rounds fired at the objects. The government rounded up 30 people whose actions were questionable at the time. Of the 30, 20 were of Japanese descent. The Navy eventually said it was all a false alarm, and there were no planes or other aircraft there at all. And that makes no sense. They see these unidentified objects flying in a formation, order a blackout, and shoot nearly 1,500 rounds over a two-hour period at absolutely nothing? To say that means the Navy is saying those people operating anti-aircraft guns were so stupid they were shooting at nothing. Then there were reports from the Royal Air Force personnel that they were seeing lights following their aircraft, beginning in March of 1942. A man named Albert Lancaster was working as a guard at a radar site near Newbiggin-by-the-Sea in Northumberland in September of 1942. Then he had a sudden urge to go outside, and what he said was a strange impulse to look up at the sky. There he saw a glowing light surrounded by dark mist, and he assumed it was a German weapon. He went to raise the alarm and was struck by a beam of light from the glowing object. He then had the sensation of floating before becoming aware that he was back at his post. He later said that he believes he was abducted that night. In December 1942, pilot officer Lumsden, who was flying with No. 3 Squadron's night flight over northern France, encountered two amber or orange-colored lights that followed him as he was conducting his intruder mission. One light was higher than the other, which appeared to rule out wingtip navigation lights from another plane. The lights pursued him until he reached the English Channel. Lumsden had never seen anything like it before. He tried to lose the objects, but they had no trouble following him. He finally did a sharp nosedive at 4,000 feet at 260 miles per hour. He pulled out of the dive, and the objects were gone. Another pilot from Lumsden's unit experienced a similar event the following night, only the lights he saw were green. Then there was an incident from August 5, 1944, that didn't come to light until more recently in 2010. There was an alleged UFO incident involving a Royal Air Force reconnaissance plane returning from a mission over France or Germany. When flying near the English coastline, the Royal Air Force plane was intercepted by a metallic object that matched the plane's course and speed before accelerating off. The Royal Air Force plane's crew was able to photograph the object. They said the object hovered noiselessly near the plane. When the incident was reported to wartime Prime Minister Winston Churchill, he discussed how to deal with the incident with U.S. General Eisenhower. Ultimately, Churchill covered up the report and banned reporting on it for fear it would create mass panic. The files on this encounter are said to be available on the National Archives website. A couple of months later, in October 1944, a Royal Air Force crew with the number 178 Squadron, based in Italy, reported seeing lights following their aircraft over Hungary during a night raid. They were in a B-24 Liberator, flown by pilot Officer Taylor, and they were followed by an intermittent red light for several minutes. This squadron had reported numerous sightings as early as April of 1944, and actually continued to make reports about similar phenomena through 1944 into 1945. Which brings us to the sightings that brought about the Foo Fighter name, and these received more attention. November 1944, a Bristol Bow Fighter crew with the 415th Night Fighter Squadron, pilot Edward Schluter, radar observer Donald Myers, and intelligence officer Fred Ringwald were flying along the Rhine River north of Strasbourg. The following exchange occurred. Ringwald: "I wonder what those lights are over there in the hills." Schluter: "Probably stars." Ringwald: "No, I don't think so." Schluter: "Are you sure it's no reflection from us?" Ringwald: "I'm positive." Ringwald realized that there actually were no hills in the area. There were 8 to 10 bright orange lights off the left wing flying through the air at high speed. Radar did not pick up the object, neither the radar in the air nor the radar on the ground. The Allied radar actually said, "Nobody up there but yourself. Are you crazy?" Schluter turned the plane towards the lights, and the lights disappeared. During the 1930s, there was a cartoon drawn by Bill Holman called Smokey Stover, about a fireman and his fire captain. The catchphrase of the cartoon was, "Where there's foo, there's fire." The word foo was borrowed by the radar operator in the 415th Night Fighter Squadron, Donald Myers, who named the strange balls of light Foo Fighters. During a mission debriefing on November 27, 1944, the unit's S2 intelligence officer stated, "Myers and Ed Schluter had sighted a red ball of fire that appeared to chase them through a variety of high-speed maneuvers. Myers was extremely agitated and had a copy of the comic strip tucked in his back pocket. He pulled it out and slammed it down on my desk and said it was another one of those effing Foo Fighters and stormed out of the briefing room." And that's how the name Foo Fighter came to be. One news article said American fighters have been encountering the eerie Foo Fighters for more than a month in their night flights. No one knows exactly what this sky weapon is. Balls of fire appear suddenly and accompany the planes for miles. They appear to be radio controlled from the ground and keep up with planes flying 300 miles per hour, official intelligence reports reveal. Myers explained more of what the crew had witnessed. "There are three kinds of these lights we call Foo Fighters. One is red balls of fire, which appear off our wingtips and fly along with us. The second is a vertical row of three balls of fire, which fly in front of us, and the third is a group of about 15 lights, which appear off in the distance like a Christmas tree up in the air, and they flicker on and off." The pilots of the Night Fighter Squadron said the balls of fire were the weirdest thing they had ever encountered. They were convinced that the Foo Fighters were designed to be a psychological as well as a military weapon, although it was not in the fireball's nature to attack planes. Myers said, "A Foo Fighter picked me up recently at 700 feet and chased me 20 miles down the Rhine Valley. I turned to starboard, and two balls of fire turned with me. I turned to the port side, and they turned with me. We were going 260 miles per hour, and the balls were keeping right up with us. On another occasion, when a Foo Fighter picked us up, I dove at 360 miles per hour. It kept right off our wingtips for a while, then zoomed up into the sky. When I first saw the things off my wingtips, I had the horrible thought that a German on the ground was ready to press a button and explode them. But they don't explode or attack us. They just seem to follow us like will-o'-wisps. Lieutenant Wallace Gould said the lights had followed his wingtips for a while, and then in a few seconds zoomed 20,000 feet into the air out of sight. Lieutenant Edward Schluter said that he had seen the Foo Fighter on two occasions, and it looked like shooting stars. In his first experience with them, Lieutenant Gould said, "I thought it was some new form of jet propulsion plane after us, but we were very close to them, and none of us saw any structure on the fireballs." Another report from a 415th Night Fighter pilot and radar observer flying at 10,000 feet near Hagenau stated, "At 0600 hours, we saw two lights climbing towards us from the ground. Upon reaching our altitude, they leveled off and stayed on my tail. The lights appeared to be large orange glows. After staying with the plane for 2 minutes, they peeled off and turned away, flying under perfect control, and then went out." The next night, the same men flying 10,000 feet observed a single red object. Pilot Lieutenant David McFalls and radar observer Lieutenant Ned Baker saw a glowing red object shooting straight up, which suddenly changed to a view of an aircraft doing a wing over, going into a dive, and disappearing. This was the first and only suggestion of a controlled flying device. Lieutenant Krasny experienced something slightly different, a wingless cigar-shaped object, glowing red just a few yards off the plane's wingtip. Lieutenant Krasny was spooked and told the pilot to attempt evasive maneuvers, but the glowing object stayed right next to the jet for several minutes before flying off and disappearing. These lights were reported by all members of the 415th. Chief of Intelligence Clayton Lawrence Bissell sent a letter to Supreme Headquarters Allied Expeditionary Forces that read, "Press reports red balls of fire accompanying planes in flight termed Foo Fighters by air personnel. Desire explanation if available." There was nothing I found that listed a comment to that letter. Does anybody else want to sing Jerry Lee Lewis's song, "Great Balls of Fire," every time I say balls of fire? Because it's really hard for me to not just break out into that song. I just needed to share that because the control is real. I am fighting it back. Be thankful. So the patterns that Meyer had described before, to include a ball of light off the wingtip, a vertical row of three balls of fire that fly in front of the plane, and a group of 15 balls of fire off in the distance like a Christmas tree, were seen in microscopic work. They are described in Industrial and Engineering Chemistry, in an article by Francis F. Lucas of the Bell Telephone Laboratories, Incorporated, New York City. The particles appear in pair chains and groups. They are in rapid motion due, apparently, to electrical forces inherent in the liquid in which they are photographed. In all cases, one larger particle, whose bulk might be likened to an airplane, dominates one or more smaller particles. Both attraction and repulsion are present. Usually, the particles attracted so strongly to a larger one that they were bound within a close distance and never touched the big particle. These little particles do not glow, though they do possess electrical charges, which under the right case could cause them to glow. And all that mumbo-jumbo means, according to some study in 1944-ish, that Foo Fighters could be a balloon. And to paraphrase all that, there was an experiment of some kind where the particles, and we don't know what these particles were, behave similarly to Foo Fighters. And that was seen with a microscope, which is incredibly confusing. Anyway, there were also reports from pilots that said they had seen mysterious floating silvery balls following their planes in the daylight. A P-47 pilot saw a gold-colored ball with a metallic finish, which appeared to be moving slowly through the air. As the sun was low, it was impossible to tell whether the sun reflected off it or the light came from within. Another P-47 pilot reported a phosphorescent golden sphere 3 to 5 feet in diameter, flying at 2,000 feet. 8th Air Force bomber crews reported seeing silver-colored spheres resembling huge Christmas tree ornaments in the sky. And the Foo Fighters didn't just show up in Germany. B-29s over Japan saw what was described as balls of fire that followed them. These balls of fire occasionally came up and almost sat on their tails. They changed color from orange to red to white and back to orange, but they never closed in to attack or crash suicide style, like the kamikaze pilots. One B-29 made evasive maneuvers inside a cloud, but when it emerged from the cloud, the ball of fire was following in the same relative position. It seemed 500 yards off and 3 feet in diameter, and had phosphorescent orange glow. There were no wings or fuselage suggesting it was an aerial bomb or plane. The ball of fire followed the B-29 for several miles and then disappeared. Some B-29 crews said they could readily lose the ball of fire by using evasive maneuvers, even though the ball kept up with them at top speed on a straight course. Others reported the opposite, that no matter what they did, they could not lose the Foo Fighter. One account said, far to the south, B-24 Liberator was 11,000 feet over Truk Lagoon when two red lights rose rapidly from below and followed the B-24. After an hour, one light turned back, the other kept on, sometimes behind, sometimes alongside, sometimes ahead, about 1,000 yards, until daybreak, when it climbed to 15,000 feet and stayed in the sun like a Jap fighter, seeking game, but never came down. During the flight, the light changed from red to orange, then white, and back to orange, and appeared to be the size of a basketball. No wing or fuselage was observed. The B-24 radioed island radar stations to see if there were any enemy planes in the sky. The answer came back, none. No B-29s were harmed. None of the explanations that were offered stood up to any scrutiny. Some said they were flares, some said it was what was called St. Elmo's fire, which is a more or less continuous, luminous electrical discharge of weak or moderate intensity in the atmosphere, emanating from elevated objects at the Earth's surface. For example, lightning conductors, wind vanes, and ship masts, or from in-flight aircraft. Others said it was pilot fatigue. But the airmen were familiar with all of these things, and none of them fit what they had seen. In 1948, Dr. Harry Trubenbeck, retired physician and captain of Fighter Pursuit Squadron in World War I, said you can't disregard flying saucers when 200 pilots saw them. He also said a pilot had a flying saucer follow him up to 30,000 feet. Then the pilot radioed his base that he was going to open fire on the flying saucer. That was the last word heard from the pilot. His charred but not burned body was found later. The plane disintegrated but not burned. The body hasn't yet been turned over to the family by the government. But there isn't anything to back up that claim. Both German and Allied pilots saw these objects, and each thought the other was responsible. Then August 1952, after 5 years of denials, the Army admitted that maybe there were flying saucers. In 1953, the CIA convened a panel of 6 top scientists familiar with experimental aviation technology to determine if the lights constituted a national security threat. The Robertson panel, named for its chair, Caltech physicist Howard P. Robertson, offered no explanation. And before we end the episode, I do want to point out something that I find interesting. Many sightings of UFOs include the description of amber or orange-colored lights. The case where this sticks out to me the most is the Phoenix lights that we covered in episode 14. But in several accounts of UFO sightings, the amber color is mentioned frequently. Coincidence? So what were the Foo Fighters? Reflections of light or otherworldly visitors concerned about what the hell we were doing? I kind of lean towards the latter. And with that, that's it for this episode. Just a heads up that we will not have a new episode coming up this coming Friday, May 26th. That is Memorial Day weekend, and there's just a lot going on here, and everybody's off on holiday, so you're not going to miss anything on Friday. I will probably play an older episode, so look for that next Friday. Remember, you can find Lurk wherever you find your other favorite podcasts. You can also find us at lurkpodcast.com, where we have all of our episodes, along with links to our social media accounts. We have a Patreon account, and now we also have the new Buzzsprout subscriptions that offers exclusive content for monthly contributions to help out the show. Remember to mark your calendars for the three upcoming Bigfoot festivals, June 24th in Sykesville, Maryland, August 26th in Reynoldsville, Pennsylvania, and September 30th in Whitehall, New York. And until next time, keep lurking.